The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
And we are now able, officially, so to speak, to say that there is going to be, at the end, when everything is in, there is going to be a hung parliament. No surprise there, with the Conservatives as the larger party, 318, or the largest party, I should say, Labour on 262. But remember, the Conservatives need 326. So, far from the guaranteeing certainty and stability for the years ahead, Theresa May called this election, and she's lost a 17, what she had at the close of play, 17 majority in favour of a hung parliament that has her on 318 only.
So there you have it. In less than a year, we have another stunning vote right here in the UK. It was just 2 months ago when British Prime Minister Theresa May called for the snap election because it seemed like such an easy way to increase her slim majority in Parliament, and particularly with the difficult negotiations ahead for Britain leaving the European Union. And now she ends up losing seats. The Weekly Standard said this morning, May's rationale was this: why not take advantage of the Labour Party's decision to place its fate in the hands of a 68-year-old Jeremy Corbyn, an unreconstructed 1970s vintage Marxist whom the press and the public hated? Look at the guy. He made Bernie Sanders look like mainstream by comparison. Well, as it turns out, the guy who made Bernie Sanders look mainstream brought in 40% of the vote. There was a huge turnout here in the UK, and 40% opted for the 1970s vintage Marxist. Jeremy Corbyn increased the Labour Party's support more than any other Labour Party leader since 1945. Yes, he didn't get the majority. And yes, the Conservatives still got the most seats, but they didn't get a majority. But think about, we'll get to the Conservatives and the coalition that Theresa May, she just announced that she's coming together with the DUP party from Northern Ireland. We'll get to that in a second. But first, think about just how much of a huge victory this is for the radical left. We've had so much to say over the last 8-9 years about what happened in the United States. America under attack. A Marxist president with all of his Marxist views. Look at the appetite for that same kind of thinking here in the UK, especially among the young. We'll look more at that coming up in the next segment. Young people turned out in droves for Labour. Jeremy Corbyn, he may not be the prime minister, but he won big, and he is all smiles today. You see him on all the clips here on the BBC, and his party, they are ecstatic. And this means he's not going to be going away anytime soon. He's not going to be leaving. His party's not going to pull back more to a moderate position. It's far to the left, and it's going to stay there. America under attack. How about Britain under attack? I mean, it seemed just a couple of years ago, the Conservatives won the last election convincingly. And following that, of course, Brexit. And you would think, well, there's a strong Conservative influence. The Conservatives wanted to leave, most of them. But look at where we are today. Are we seeing the UK follow the same path that the United States took back in 2008, 2009? I just want to remind you, I alluded to this yesterday, my father in a message over graduation weekend. It's from May 20th, and he talked about the big decline, the devastating decline, as he put it, of the United Kingdom. He said that this year, terrible things are going to come upon Britain. Well, not just Britain, America and Judah as well. But particularly since January of this year, in that message he talked about the British royals and the reality show that they're becoming. And my father said, it's a pretty good indication that we're gonna see a rapid decline in Britain. And look at what's been happening. Yesterday I talked about the terrorist attacks. Three of them, just in the past 2 or 3 months. Two in London, one in Manchester. Two major terrorist attacks in just the past 2 weeks. Just the past 2 weeks. And typically conservatives are seen as, well, they're strong on security. And they're going to go after the terrorists. I mean, Prime Minister May herself responded on Sunday or Monday following the attacks in London, saying that, you know, that we've had enough. This is too much. And yet, as Brad McDonald covered on Monday with you on this program, no one has solutions. No one knows the answers to this problem. Well, coming back to this election, I mean, given the fact that the conservatives are seen as the ones maybe who are stronger on defense and security, and yet still, even after these most recent attacks, it didn't seem like those terrorist attacks had much of an impact on the elections. Melanie Phillips, I think it was emailed out just today, she's talking about the fundamental and lethal divide that you see in the West over how to respond to these terrorist atrocities. Melanie says, in the last 3 months, there have been 3 sets of Islamist attacks in London and Manchester. 5 additional such plots have been thwarted over that period. 5 additional attacks have been stopped. The security service is trying to monitor 3,500 homegrown Muslim terrorist suspects. It says it cannot be sure of preventing more such attacks. It is clear that it is overwhelmed by this problem. Melanie Phillips says, yet even now, people are minimizing, misunderstanding, and misdiagnosing the threat and attacking those who are calling it out. I mean, instead of attacking the attackers, they're attacking those who are sounding the alarm, people like Melanie Phillips. When you think of, and Jeremy Corbyn reflects this as well, just the astonishing changes that have happened to our nations in the past 20, 30, 40 years. Mark Stein, the commentator, he was on a radio program just yesterday talking about how little of an impact these terrorist atrocities have had on the election. People just don't seem to, I mean, it's not important for them to get a strong leader who really wants to fight back or go on the offensive. Where do you see it? This is on a program, Andrew Lawton's show. I'm not familiar with his show, but I'm familiar with Mark Stein. And here's the exchange talking about the impact, or the lack thereof, the impact that terrorism had on the election. Clip one.
In the UK, Theresa May is still in the lead, but it's narrowed considerably. And generally speaking, conservatives are seen as being the stronger voices on terror. Yet in the UK, we're not seeing that. Why is that? Why is she not seeing a huge a surge in support with what's happened in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think they're a little further down the line than Canada, Australia, certainly the United States are on this, in that there's a kind of fatalism about it. I mean, it is extraordinary to me in the final 2 weeks of an election campaign to have had 2 terror attacks with 29 people dead. And people always include the corpse count because it's the lower one. But actually, the horrific numbers of wounded, which if you combine them all is over 100 of them. And you go back to the way it used to be in the IRA days, relatively small. I mean, it sounds terrible to talk about this, like this, because if it's your daughter or it's your husband, it's 100% of your loved ones who are dead. But when you had, comparatively speaking, much smaller death tolls, it stunned the nation as recently as 20, 30, 40 years ago in Britain. Now, I think there's a fatalism because they recognize that neither party is serious about it. Neither party, and even if they were serious, they actually have no idea what to do about it. And I think it's not quite that bad in Canada, it's not quite that bad in Australia, but in Britain and in large parts of Europe, they're beginning, there's a kind of, there's nothing that can be done about this. They've taken the message of the Mayor of London and the French Prime Minister to heart that you just have to get used to it. Life will be very pleasant, but then once in a while, your loved one will leave for work and get blown to pieces on the subway, and that's just the way it is. You've got to get used to it.
That's Mark Stein on Andrew Lawton's show, talking about how it is here in the UK and in many parts of Europe. They're getting the message from the French official. They're getting the message from the Mayor of London, who they're out there saying, look, you're just going to have to get used to it. There's nothing really that we can do about it. These kinds of things, we covered this yesterday with you on the program. But they're saying these kinds of things, they happen in big cities. And so, what can be done? And then you here you come up to this election. I mean, you're fresh off two massive terrorist attacks. And as Stein brought out there, you go back just 20 or 30 years, and it would have been totally different, the reaction. And even with just one or two deaths or three deaths, pretty amazing how dramatic the change has been here in the UK, and you see it. I mean, it's worse here, as he brought out, than maybe in some other Ephraimite nations. But this is the general direction that the nations of Israel are headed in. The end-time descendants of Israel, the latter-day Israelites, the attacks are increasing. They're worsening. And yet, what are our nations, what are they turning to? Who are they turning to lead us? Well, they're individuals like this in so many cases. Jeremy Corbyn and Barack Obama and others like them. Now, as I say, Corbyn's not the prime minister. Theresa May, it looks like she's not going to be stepping down. There's certainly been calls for her to step down, even coming from conservative think tanks. Richard Palmer, by the way, he has a piece that was just posted at the Trumpet.com. UK election chaos, what next? We'll be following this story. What's next for Britain? What kind of government are we going to have? Well, in the short term, she has to form a coalition with the DUP party. That's the Democratic Unionist Party in Northern Ireland. And like Richard brings out in his article, they're a right-wing party, even more conservative than the larger conservative party. And so in some ways, I mean, it may, even though they hold a slim majority, she needs 322 or 23, something like that. She needs that many seats, and coming up with 319, she fell just short of it. And so the DUP party, which won 10 seats yesterday, because they'll have a fair bit of leverage, I mean, it could keep the conservative party more conservative here in the short run. In any event, it's going to make it very difficult for Theresa May to govern. As Richard brings out in his piece, the results of yesterday's election, it makes her government, Theresa May's government, incredibly unstable. There are, as I say, calls for her to step down. But where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? This is a difficult time for Britain. A difficult transition, all of these decisions, all of these huge decisions. You've got these terrorist attacks, which so many people in the UK don't seem to care about. You've got an unstable government. You've got the difficult Brexit negotiations. These are challenging times. These are trying times for the United Kingdom. stay tuned. Keep logging on to thetrumpet.com, and we'll tell you where it's headed. Go to the site today if you like, and read Richard Palmer's article, UK Election Chaos, What Next? You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
And having secured the largest number of votes and the greatest number of seats in the general election, it is clear that only the Conservative and Unionist Party has the legitimacy and ability to provide that certainty by commanding a majority in the House of Commons. As we do, we will continue to work with our friends and allies in the Democratic Unionist Party in particular. Our two parties have enjoyed a strong relationship over many years, and this gives me the confidence to believe that we will be able to work together in the interests of the whole United Kingdom.
That's Theresa May just from a few minutes ago, speaking after she met with the Queen to discuss this coalition. We've got the guys collecting clips on the fly here. But as she mentioned there, she's got to join together with the Democratic Unionist Party from Northern Ireland to make this work. I mean, she finds herself in a weaker position just 6 or 7 weeks after calling for a snap election, just assuming, and everyone along with her in the UK, that she would gain a bigger majority. How quickly things can turn for the worse. Melanie Phillips even said she was taking a calculated gamble. And now she finds herself in a weaker position. Well, but then, as I say, you think about just the number of people in the UK, 40%, and so many of them young people, turning out in droves to vote for the Marxist Party. I mean, let's call it what it is. We have a little montage here of just some of the infamous statements made by Jeremy Corbyn and his administration. Go ahead and play clip two.
You see, I don't want to just bring down the government anymore. I want to destroy the system. Because there's a system. How do we change the system? We've got to demand systemic change. I'm honest with you. I'm a Marxist. You know,
I suppose some people will judge that on balance, Mao did more good than harm. We can't say that about the Marxists.
What was the good? Remind me what the good
be
was.
Serious,
well,
though.
I want to first of all say thank you everyone for being here tonight.
and say that tomorrow evening it will be my pleasure and my honour to host an event in Parliament where our friends from Hezbollah will be speaking. I'd also invited friends from Hamas to come and speak as well. Unfortunately,
on Northern Ireland, you didn't just deal with Sinn Féin. You dealt with the IRA 3 weeks after the Brighton bomb, in which the IRA had tried to destroy the democratically elected government of this country. You invited two convicted IRA terrorists to the House of Commons.
They were former prisoners who had come out of prison, women who had come out of prison, came to Parliament, actually in a meeting that had been arranged long before, to talk about prison conditions and rehabilitation of prisoners.
They IRA.
Is there anything wrong with that, since they had a spent conviction?
They had surely, their organisation had just tried to blow up the British government.
The whole history.
Did you not think about that?
Of course I thought about it.
You still invited them in.
And I wanted a peace process.
He just wanted a peace process with the organization that tried to blow up the British government. And others in his group, his party. I'm a Marxist. We're friends with Hezbollah, friends with Hamas. We want to destroy the systems. Does that sound familiar? America under attack. Fundamental transformation. They're getting awfully close. What a victory. What a victory for the Labour Party. They're not going away. They're gaining influence. They're gaining power. And it's because, as I say, the young people are turning out in droves for this kind of government. This is what our youths, this is what our children want. In the Mirror today here in the UK, a headline, Revenge of the Youth. How 18 to 24-year-olds furious over Brexit gave Theresa May a disastrous general election result. Bloomberg Politics has a headline, British Millennials Take Revenge on Parents and Grandparents. A generational divide here. Haaretz down in the little nation of Israel. British young people take revenge for the Brexit sin. They're getting the adults back. And it's not just the youths, it's those teaching them. There's a Time Higher Education study published earlier this month that found that the Labour Party had overwhelming support from university officials, professors. 54% back Labour as opposed to 7% who back Conservatives. You think about this in relation to what I discussed with you yesterday about the problem with higher education. That's really where the problem is here. I mean, the family breakdown, that's the most significant contributor for sure. You have children that aren't being educated, that aren't being prepared for education. And then they're sent off to these institutions of higher learning, and they come out and they vote in droves for the Marxist professors. For the friends of Hamas, for the ones that want to destroy the system. Back to that Weekly Standard piece. This is from today. It says Jeremy Corbyn would have been a terrible candidate in a national election if this were 1974 when he entered into politics, or in 1983 when he first got elected to Parliament. He opposed the Falklands War and backed Fidel Castro, the IRA, and the PLO. But the Falklands War is over, Castro is dead, the IRA is disarmed, and the PLO has been superseded. And a good number of the voters who showed up for Corbyn were not born back in those days. They weren't born in those days. Like Sanders, Corbyn has found a way to thrill university students and senior citizens, even while his appeal remains almost inaudible to those born between 1952 and 1992. Youth turnout on Thursday appears to have been high. See, everybody in between, they think he's wild and crazy and dangerous. But for the elderly, that are probably seeking the handouts and for those under 25. He's a rock star. He knows how to thrill university students. You think about this party that came very close to taking over Britain last night. I mean, here again, this is the main reason that Theresa May called for the snap election, because she looked at Jeremy Corbyn and that party and thought, he is so extreme, he is so crazy, that surely we'll win a majority, a larger majority. Surely we'll gain more votes. And as it is, who's all smiles today? Who's all smiles this morning in London? It's Jeremy Corbyn and his party. Look at the U.S. media, the obsession over Donald Trump and the supposed links to Russia. And over here, the leader of the Labour Party has all these direct links to the Islamic Republic of Iran. I mean, Iran was actually paying Corbyn £20,000 for the 5 appearances that he made on Press TV, the Iranian propaganda channel. You heard the clip there. He called Hamas, Hezbollah. They're our friends. They're our friends. He supported the infamous Finsbury Park Mosque, the mosque that encourages terrorism. He's friends with them. He's friends with the terrorists. That's who he wants to make peace with. In 2014, just a few years ago, Jeremy Corbyn was part of a group that welcomed Abdullah Jabala, the imam that calls for people to wage holy war against the United Kingdom, against the UK and America. 3 years ago, I mentioned yesterday how he called the death of Osama bin Laden a tragedy. He sees that as a tragedy. I also mentioned yesterday John McDonnell. He's the number two man in Corbyn's party, the shadow chancellor of the Exchequer. And you listen, you heard some of his comments in that montage that I played for you. He, like Corbyn, supports the IRA. His focus is more on the economy because of his position. But he's a Marxist. He said here recently, well, I'm not a Marxist. Even though, as you heard in the montage, he was recorded as saying in 2013, quite proudly, I'm a Marxist. I'm honest with people. I'm a Marxist. And then for political purposes here recently, well, I'm not really a Marxist. He is. He admitted it. He's given speeches in front of communist flags. And as this clip, which you heard in the montage, brings out, he wants to destroy the system. Clip 3.
And that gives us, again, another opportunity in the same way the financial crisis does. You see, I don't want to just bring down the government anymore. I want to destroy the system. Because it is a system.
What an opportunity, you see, we have here with these crises to bring down the government, to bring down the system. This is an opportunity for us, for our party, for our radical leftist party. Diane Abbott, she's another extremist in the same party. I mean, she really had some disastrous interviews in the lead up to this latest election. But she's one who praises Marx, praises Mao, the man who murdered millions and millions of people. This is the party so many of the young people in the United Kingdom, so many of the young people support, enthusiastically support. Go back and look at Great Again, my father's new book, where he talks about the spread of the communist influence in the United States. Today, you know, most Americans, most Britons, they don't even really see this as a threat anymore. So many of them embrace it. So many of the leaders in these far left parties, when 20, 30, 40 years ago, they would have tried to conceal the fact that they support Marxist ideology, but not today, as you heard there in that clip. Not today. Because these ideas, these radical leftist ideas, they've gone mainstream. They're now mainstream political views in the Democrat Party in the United States and in the Labour Party here in the UK. Herbert Armstrong, I told you yesterday on education just how far ahead of his time he was. He said back in 1962, the Communist Party is merely a trick term to pull the wool over our eyes and deceive us, a means of getting a fifth column into our midst, of getting the enemy's government into our very midst, leading us to accept it as part of our government. Its only object is to destroy our government. That's the objective here, to destroy the government, to destroy the system. And they're having great success on both sides of the Atlantic. My father writes this in his book, What Do You Know About Communism? He says a growing number of Americans support the government taking over healthcare and over major segments of the national economy. They fail to understand the dangers that accompany a communist system. Modern proponents of communism downplay its subversive goals, but subversion is its very foundation. That's what it's all about. The Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels is considered the sacred text of communism. It stresses the need for a total overthrow of existing governments. That's what they want. That's what they call for. That's what they proclaim. You just heard it. That's what so many young people here and in the United States enthusiastically embrace. And the problem, it gets back to family breakdown. It gets back to the problem with education, the lack of true education. And what a difference it is. What a difference there is in Armstrong College. I got into this yesterday, talking about the difference between, the stark difference between the educational institutions of this world and what you see at Edmond and at Edstone, where the emphasis is on character building. At God's College, the emphasis is on building character, developing a sound mind, becoming emotionally mature and socially balanced, building a well-rounded personality, becoming a more cultured individual. And along with the classroom training to get on-the-job training as well in the work-study program. Yesterday, I didn't have time to get into this piece from Mr. Armstrong. This is from 1976. And as I said yesterday, he actually originally wrote it back in the 1950s. And then he comes out in the mid-70s and says, you know what? This applies as much to today, all the more so, in fact, as it did when I first wrote it. He's responding to this reader who asked, you know, is education necessary? I mean, given the fact that this is not yet God's world, Mr. Armstrong says, we're not going to suggest that you should fill yourself chock full of information, for the real benefit of your education will be knowledge and understanding, not a long list of memorized facts. Here he's basically just discussing what true education is. He says the main purpose of education as we see it is to teach one to think. Now, yesterday I went through those studies that show that the critical thinking of youths, it actually gets worse throughout the college years. School isn't helping our young people to think critically. It says it's only by learning how to think and by learning how to sift out things worth thinking about that you can put yourself in the best position for enjoying a happy life. This is very important. This is a very important reason for wishing to continue at school and getting an education. So Mr. Armstrong was very much for education. He was very much behind pursuing education. But a true education, not the kind of education that this world offers, but a godly education, an education with God right at the center, an education with God's revelation serving as the foundation. He says further on in this 1976 article, what we are saying is that education is absolutely essential, but we are not referring to what is called book learning and nothing else. What we're after is the education that will teach you to think and reason properly, which will improve your material prospects, which will add to your poise and deportment, which will develop your judgment, and which all in all will round you out for a fully successful and happy life. Further on, it says, education will open up to you the opportunity to follow the true and beautiful and good, and it will help you avoid vulgarity and false sentiments by providing you with standards by which to judge values. It will enable you to decide what will contribute toward your happiness in life. Without education, how can you discern what's good for you, what's right or wrong, what's true or false? Or what's lovely or ugly? I mean, how can you consider it even to be education? If you can't make these kinds of decisions, if you can't determine what's right and wrong, if you can't discern what's good for you and what's not good for you, what's true or false, what's lovely or ugly. It says here, young people have more and more to learn as our culture grows more complex. Education gives us the tools to deal with material forces that were once our enemies, but education must also, listen to this, education must also teach us how to live and behave in this new society. That's what's missing in today's education. And as I said yesterday, even the knowledge of how to earn a living, even that, I mean, so many young people are not even getting that when they go off to college. But where is there any instruction whatsoever on how to live? John Adams, the second U.S. president, he said there are two educations. One should teach us how to make a living, and the other, how to live. But how to live, you see, that's missing from modern education. And that's why we have an educational crisis. And that's why we have young people today coming out of college who don't know right from wrong, who can't discern what's the truth and what's false, who have no idea what it means or what is lovely or ugly, as Mr. Armstrong said there. He goes on and talks about how education, he just gets into some of the practical things that you should take away from it, how that it should be useful, how that it should teach you how to know what's important. He says the three R's do not constitute education any more than a knife, fork, and spoon constitute a dinner. Some of the greatest bores are people who have memorized a great deal of information and love to talk about it. He says the aim of an educational institution is to give students a living fund of knowledge from which they may generate ideas. When you can bring relevant background to bear on a problem, assemble pertinent data, grasp relationships, appraise the values involved, and make a judgment, you are truly an educated person. He goes on to talk about the importance of courage and work and discipline in education. Look at our undisciplined youths today. Look at the things, as I said yesterday, that they complain about. in the average university protest, the everyday garden variety university protest, we should not try too hard to make education easy, Mr. Armstrong said. There are difficult things that must be done, whether we like it or not. Education should prepare us to face difficulties courageously, to persevere steadfastly, and to work conscientiously. Some of this overlaps with what I discussed yesterday, but it's good review. I mean, if you're not coming through the educational institution with a more disciplined mind, can you actually say it was true education? But you look at universities today, they don't teach discipline. The underlying message at educational institutions today is, hey, you do what you want. No structure here. No discipline here. In fact, you don't even have, if you pay your bills, you don't even have to show up for class, so many of you. No rules, no laws, no governance. It just reminds me of what I go through with the freshman students at God's College. That old article from 1981, I think it was. The trouble with Harvard. And the graduate there who was writing about the way it is today as compared to, I think it was when he went to school. I forget the name of the author. But he was basically saying there's no rules here. I mean, you come in as an 18-year-old and you're just left to roam and to figure it out on your own. And even the guidance counselors, they don't give you any structure, any discipline. And then the professors, you can get extension after extension after extension if you need it. And then all of the romance and the breakups and the trauma that comes as a result of that. No revealed spiritual knowledge, no godly standard of morality, no development of righteous character. You're only going to get that at God's College. You think about Proverbs 9 and verse 10, this little proverb that says, "The fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." That's where true education begins. Being grounded in God's law, getting grounded in revealed spiritual knowledge. Is this important? Well, consider the prophecy. I've gone through some of Hosea this week on the program. The memory verse in Hosea 4 and verse 6. God says, "My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you, that you shall be no priest to me." It says, "Seeing you have forgotten the law of your God," God says, "I will also forget your children." Are we doing what's right for our children, what's best for our children, for their future? Look at all the problems. They're getting worse by the day. I mean, any parent with small children, without the truth of God, if their eyes are open to just a basic understanding of what's true and false, I'd be a little bit concerned right now. Where is this headed? 40%, not far away from half in this country, prefer the Marxist ideology, would like to see the system destroyed, the government brought down. Well, it's not like the government in place has all the answers, and it's certainly not the case in the United States either. But to tear down a system and to replace it with anarchy, well, that's just Judges 21 and verse 25. That's just history repeating itself. Every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. And what does the proverb say? There's a way that seems right. There's a way that might seem right. But the end, think about the end. The end is death. So get back to the proverbs that talk about true education, the fear of the eternal, that's where it all begins. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll touch on one more news item of the day and go through some reader feedback that we've been getting in response to the Trumpet brief over the past week. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Welcome back to the program. Another piece here from Reuters. I tell you, it's Bible prophecy. It's being fulfilled at a lightning pace. Warning of U.S. desertion. EU chief calls for European defense. This is following the last couple of weeks, and we've been reporting on a lot of it. But here it says here that 2 days after unveiling multi-billion euro plan to help fund European defense research, Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said it was time to integrate militaries and defense industries, seizing on the strong backing from France's new president and Britain's decision to leave the bloc. Now is the time. I mean, if ever there's a time to integrate militaries, it's easy to pick apart, you know, member after member and say, well, they don't contribute much to NATO. They don't have much of a military force. Their force is dilapidated. But put them all together. Put them all together and then ramp up your defense spending. And how fast could this change? How fast could this turn around? I see the tide turning, Juncker told a conference in Prague, citing growing support in EU capitals for military cooperation, notably from French President Emmanuel Macron. It says, although the European Union has more than a dozen military missions abroad, the world's biggest trading bloc has never been able to match its economic might with broad defensive power, preferring to rely on the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. I mean, it's never had to spend money on it. Because the agreement since the end of World War II was that, this is the United States. Look, you can develop your economies and rebuild your nations, and we will provide the defense. We will fund most of the defense measures. We'll lead the NATO organization. And this, as that first NATO chief brought out, I mean, it was designed to keep the Russians out, keep the Americans in, and keep the Germans down. Keep the Germans down. Well, it's only a matter of time before the world's biggest trading bloc and before this European Union, the economic might aligns more perfectly with the defensive power, the military power. Britain has long blocked EU defense integration, it says, fearing a European army that would challenge national sovereignty. Now, Britain has good reason to be concerned about an EU defense integration. And then it talks later about Donald Trump, how that he wants Europe to take on more of its own security measures, and how he's criticized European states for not spending enough and so on. It concludes here with a quote from Juncker. It says, NATO can no longer be used as a convenient alibi to argue against greater European efforts. He said the United States is, quote, no longer interested in guaranteeing Europe's security in our place. You think that was just a casual little omission that didn't amount to much? President Trump leaving out that statement endorsing Article 5? From what I understand, the statement was in there. His speechwriters put it in there, but he took it out. He took it out at the last minute, and as we've explained on this program, everyone listening, every European Union member, every leader was listening and waiting for that one statement, the one statement that he nixed. And so here comes the European chief, the Commission president, saying that the United States is, quote, no longer interested in guaranteeing Europe's security. So we've got to integrate our militaries and bump up our defense spending and defend ourselves. Huge mistake. Even when you just look at it from history, huge mistake. But what does your Bible prophesy? Well, if you've listened to this program very often, you know where that's leading. A few emails here before we conclude. This is in response to the trumpet briefs from over the past week or so. One here about the Paris Accords. And in reply to yesterday's brief, it says, which is so sad, one of the best things I learned from my mother, whenever my brother or I would say something that was unfair, she would tell us, life isn't always fair. One of the best things I learned during my short stay in college was from an accounting teacher who showed up late to class one day, looked around at everyone seated, and said, everyone has a story. If only these people could learn these two lessons. That was in response to Donald Trump causes climate change, the change in relations between the U.S. and NATO member states. Another one here following the brief on Monday about the London terrorist attack. I really enjoyed this email. I would really like to secure a copy of the book you referenced, The U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. It says later on, this is another one actually, how very interesting. I see Trump was slammed for saying that Khan, that's the mayor of London, should be doing something and not just telling people to keep calm. Mr. Trump is quite correct. And the English cannot see the wood for the trees. Ephraim is indeed as a silly dove. Another one here in response to Brad McDonald's brief that it says, thanks a lot for this insight about Britain and America. So very insightful. There were quite a few that came in response to the Tuesday brief on D-Day, the anniversary of D-Day, the 73rd anniversary. It says, thank you for reminding us of the great God we serve, especially the miracles that we are unaware of. Satan, the prince of the power of the air, and his fake news, it asks, our God who is responsible for the real, truthful news, he delivers. He delivers. Another one here says, thank you for your heart-wrenching brief regarding D-Day. Thank you for remembering these heroes who fought Nazi barbarism and the destruction of the scepter tribe, the Jews, that is the tribe of our Lord Jesus Christ. We own our gratitude forever. What makes me upset is that our media hardly mentions one of the most heroic events in modern day Israel. It says I'll skip down to another one. This from Saskatchewan, Canada. It says, my husband and I were wondering if you've ever read We Have a Guardian. I haven't. It's an incredible collection of testimonies and firsthand accounts of miraculous events in the First and Second War. I believe we bought our copy from the very country you now live in through Coventry Publishing. It's amazing how many times God intervened to save Ephraim and Manasseh, especially when facing overwhelming odds. God made it very clear who gave the victory. It's so sad that we don't teach this or even acknowledge God in any way when he makes it so clear how real he is. And it's terrifying to think modern-day Israel has to get to know God the hard way through indescribable horror and suffering. But get to know him, they will, and they'll never leave him again. Another one here, this from New Zealand. It says, thank you for such a moving and thought-inspiring trumpet brief. I downloaded your Trumpet Daily Radio show, and I'm eagerly looking forward to listening to this program tonight. Listen each day to the Trumpet Daily Radio show and eagerly log on to my email account each day for the trumpet brief. It says, many thanks to you and the team for the research, time, energy, and perfect presentation of these programs you bring to us all. That's just a small sampling of some of the emails we got in response to this week's Trumpet Brief. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the end of another Trumpet Daily Radio Show, another week of broadcasting on KPCG. Thank you for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week.